Good afternoon, everyone. I'm very grateful to have with me today two highly experienced colleagues from our mental health service. We have Ross Bailey, who heads the service. Ross has first-hand experience of some of the challenges coronavirus poses for our community, as he has been self-isolating for the past 7 days. Because of this, Rob, who you will soon see is well, joins us remotely. We also have here in person Dr. Mark Skelding, who is one of our consultant clinical psychologists. Thank you, gentlemen, to both of you for taking the time to be with us today. Before we turn to the topic of mental health, I have two updates I would like to give you. The first is a statement the Chief Minister has asked me to read out on his behalf, and the statement is as follows. Good afternoon. First of all, I would like to thank everyone for their support and kindness over the past few days. I have been humbled by the volume of messages. It was important to me to keep everyone updated, and I have today received my text message to say that I have tested positive for COVID-19. I have been at home self-isolating since I first became symptomatic. I have continued to chair the National Strategy Group every morning and today, Council of Ministers. I have mild symptoms and I intend to continue working from home. I'm not the only one who would have received a message today. And while I am fortunate to have family and friends around me, some will be on their own. Some will be receiving support from our professional staff, and I cannot thank them enough for the work they are doing for our island. I will keep you all up to date through these briefings, which David and his guests will continue to run. Let us remember the way to beat this invisible enemy is to stay at home. Our key workers are going to work to help save lives. You can do that as well. Stay at home. The support I have received shows the Isle of Man is greatest when we all pull together. And together we can defeat this virus. And I'm sure everyone would like to join me in wishing the Chief Minister well as he recovers from this dreadful disease. The second update I have for you is the daily update in relation to the testing figures. We have now completed a total number of tests of 1,879. Of those, we've got 1,751 tests back and we're awaiting results of 128 tests. The total confirmed cases now stands at 190. We have total presumed recovered of 92, which leaves 97 active cases, and the current number of confirmed cases in Nobles Hospital is 12. Turning to today's topic of mental health. Over recent decades, the way society views mental health has changed beyond all recognition. No longer taboo, there is a growing understanding and acceptance that mental and emotional well-being affects all of us as individuals. In the same way that each of us can articulate and describe how we feel physically at any given time, a sore back, a headache, the same should be true for our mental and emotional state. Mental health and well-being is a continuum. From low-level feelings such as anxiety and stress to the more serious conditions we traditionally associate with mental health care. Checking in on our mental state is something we all need to proactively do. It's no different to having our 5 portions of fruit and veg a day or trying to take regular exercise. Mental health matters to us all, and now more than ever. I'm acutely aware that the circumstances in which many of us find ourselves, working from home, children not at school, social distancing, self-isolation, are new experiences, and that such a sudden change to our lifestyles can be unsettling. All of these measures have been taken to protect life and avoid our health and care services from being overwhelmed by a severe spike in the coronavirus cases. But we must not dismiss the impact these lifestyle changes can have on our well-being. Not being able to see friends and family in person, prolonged periods indoors, not mixing with colleagues at work, and of course, the understandable worry for ourselves and our loved ones in relation to contracting COVID-19. I hope today that Ross and Dr. Skelding can give you some advice, top tips and reassurance to help your mental and emotional well-being at this time. And at this point, I'd like to hand over to Ross and invite Dr. Skelding up to the podium as well.
Thank you, Minister, for the opportunity to speak about mental health today, and in particular, emotional well-being. The Mental Health Service cares for around 4,350 members of our community, and some of whom are particularly vulnerable to deterioration in their mental health. It's these individuals and other members, vulnerable members of our community, that the Mental Health Services and other government departments and charitable organisations are working completely tirelessly to collectively support. I think it's really important, and this is something that absolutely we want to stress, is the issue of anxiety and how feeling anxiety during these times and the physical feelings and the associated thoughts provoked by this emotion are entirely normal. This has been referred to repeatedly within the daily press conferences. We're in unprecedented times. We're in the midst of a global epidemic. Clearly this and the necessary restrictions on our daily lives will impact on our emotional well-being. It's completely normal. Anxiety, however, is a normal and often very helpful response that prepares us and motivates us. In the current context, it's anxiety that promotes us to self-isolate. It's anxiety that helps us self-distance and take necessary and appropriate precautions. It's anxiety that protects us and our loved ones, and in particular, through these measures, safeguards the most vulnerable members of our community. As a mental health professional, and indeed a society, we should be more concerned for those who are anxious, as it's these individuals, perhaps, who are more risk of disregarding the timely and proportionate measures that our government has employed and the overwhelming majority of our community has embraced. We need to recognise, how there are times when anxiety can become overwhelming and impacts on our mental health on a daily basis. Recognising this and practically seeking advice and support is clearly very valuable. This may mean reaching out to trusted friends and family or taking note of any changes in behaviour of our friends and our family and loved ones. There's a range of practical measures that we as an individual and a community can adopt. And whilst my colleague, Dr. Skelding, will expand on these, there is a vast amount of valuable information available online, and particularly within the government IM coronavirus under the Mental Health tag. We're currently in the process of populating this site with more additional information, self-help tools, advice and guidance on practical measures that people could take. Before my colleague comes on the stage and speaks a little more detail about some of these practical measures, I just wanted to say as a mental health professional and part of the Mental Service, I've been completely overwhelmed by the commitment and dedication of my colleagues within mental health, the wider department, and absolutely the third sector organisations and charitable organisations. We're incredibly fortunate to live where we live in such a cohesive and caring island, and together we will overcome the conflict. Mark, can I invite you onto the stage?
Okay, thank you, Ross. I'd like to reiterate what Ross was saying about anxiety. It is a pandemic. It is an appropriate response to feel stressed or anxious. And that is what allows us to adapt. That is what allows us to keep ourselves safe, our families safe, society safe, and protect our NHS. If you do have a notice that anxiety is becoming overwhelming, that it's stopping you from engaging in normal aspects of your functioning, then hopefully some of the ideas I'm going to tell you now might help with that. One of the problems certainly with isolation is that we get removed from the things that maintain our good mental health. So, for example, with activities, it's the activities that we do, the things that we enjoy doing, it's the things that we're good at that maintain good mental health and well-being. It's being connected to people, feeling valued and appreciated. And if we're isolated and we can't do those things, then we're going to be more stressed, we're going to be more depressed. In terms of anxiety, one of the biggest things we need to talk about, I guess, is about structure. When we're self-isolating, the natural structure that we have in terms of our work, our social engagements, our hobbies is removed. That point at the day where we wake up every morning, we might start to notice that we're getting up that little bit later. We lose that anchor. We start sleeping in later. We start struggling then to go to bed at night. We become restless. We start turning things over in our mind. Well, if we start to do that, it's going to affect our thinking. It's going to affect our concentration, our memory. It's going to make us more irritable. It's going to mean that we struggle to cope and adapt to things. And that's what we need to do most at the moment, because it's a pandemic. Things are constantly changing, as we're told every day, and we need to be able to adapt to them. One of the worries for me is that when people become isolated, they stop being active, which means they become lower in mood. As you become lower in mood, your concentration, your memory, your motivation starts to drop. So you have less motivation to do new and novel things. And it's the new and novel things that we take for granted, which are stimulating, which occupy our thinking. And if we haven't got that occupation, if we haven't got those things that we're learning, that we're getting good at, that we're taking pleasure in, well, we're more likely to spend too much time ruminating or thinking about the things that are stressful to us, the potential threats in the future. And if we spend too much time in a future focus or in a secondary emotion of anger, for example, angry that the borders weren't closed sooner, that things weren't done, that happened in the past, then unfortunately that's going to really affect our mental health in the present. So we need to find structure in our day, set ourselves a time when we get up every day, set ourselves tasks, things that we enjoy doing, things that might be difficult, things that we're going to learn that are new, and plan in social contact. So you might find that there's a normal time that you go to your golf club or to your dance class and plan in time at that same time to speak with some of those people. Put things in place so that we can prevent that deterioration in mental health, because prevention is far much easier than a cure. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Ross, and thank you very much, Dr. Skeldon. We'll now take questions, and first up today I have Tim Glover. Tim from Manx Radio.
Thank you, Minister. Obviously, best wishes to the Chief Minister and all those equipped that are tested positive for COVID-19 and 32 more cases today. The outbreak at Abbotswood Nursing Home, it is a private home, does have NHS residents, but are they not responsible for getting their own PPE? Are there many other care homes that do have NHS residents, and how many are there? The governments have really stepped in when the first resident tested positive to avoid a potential outbreak and strain on the hospital.
Right, well, there's several questions obviously in there, Tim. Taking it first, I know that there's taking the PPE one first. No, we do provide the care homes with PPE. We do so free of charge. This is obviously a public health emergency, so it is important that we interact with them and provide them with any equipment that they need. There is very clear guidance to the care homes as to which equipment should be used when, and I know the department has been engaging with every care home across the island on the use of PPE, and also when it is appropriate and also when it isn't. In terms of the cases confirmed, they have two confirmed cases. The department did step in as soon as the first case was confirmed and offered the home appropriate advice.
Thank you. Can I ask our mental health experts a question?
Yes, certainly. I'll just invite Dr. Skeldon up to the podium.
We're obviously aware of a great resource online these days, and a lot of third sector organisations as well. The elderly, some of them have been in self-isolation now for a number of weeks and face many more weeks, and some are not au fait with online resource. What would you suggest would be the best thing they can do, apart from, as you've said already, maintain a routine?
Ross, you want to ask this one or me? Oh, okay, it's going to be me. To be honest, my first step would be to see whether you can contact friends or family to get you access to those tools. Certainly, iPads can come ready loaded with this software, such as FaceTime. Actually, there's some pretty good people in the call centres who would support you in using that. One of the things that I've really liked recently is this initiative with grandparents contacting grandchildren with education, setting them tasks each day and quizzes and such. And it's my sense that actually there's been more contact with that generation than ever before in that sense.
Can I just add there? I think that's a really valid point, Mark. And I think the community in general, and that's the feeling that really comes out of this, is how the community is coming together to support each other. And I think, you know, there's people are really reaching out to friends in a really cohesive way to support people. And I think that's particularly evident on the Isle of Man, and something I certainly see on a regular basis and incredibly heartened by, and I think that's a particular strength of this island.
Yeah, there's also the Get Well website on the island that it's set up so that people can post needs that they have, difficulties that they're struggling with, and people can volunteer to help them. So there are people who volunteer to pick up things for them and drop things off. And we'll have a conversation in the garden if wanted. So there are those things that are being developed within the third sector.
Tim, just before we move on, apologies, I do realise I missed part of your question there. Part of your question was also around how many people DHSC has spread across the care homes. We have a variety of beds across different care homes with people who are on DHSC rates. So it's mixed. There are some homes that are purely DHSC. The home you've referred to, though, as you correctly said at the start, is private. Next up, I have Leanne from 3FM.
Good afternoon, Minister.
Good afternoon, Leanne.
Firstly, our thoughts are with the Chief Minister, and obviously we wish him a very speedy recovery. My first question is for Mr. Bailey, please.
Yep.
Okay, so with the Chief Constable announcing yesterday that police have seen a rise in domestic abuse crimes by 71%, I just wondered if you could tell me what support there is specifically for victims of domestic abuse on Ireland.
I think this has been well documented, an anticipated increase in incidents of domestic violence. The mental health service is continuing effectively business as normal. We continue to accept referrals, both in terms of the crisis from the community wellbeing service right through the tiered step care approach. So nothing's changed. The only vivid thing that's changed in terms of the service provision at the moment is that our mode of contact with people. So of course, with social distancing, people working remotely, that's been the only change. So we're continuing to accept referrals into the service. We've not seen any significant spike in referrals to the service. In some parts of the service, we've seen referrals come down. I think what we can anticipate, certainly as this rolls on, and the economic impacts as well, and the pressures that are on family units, that we will see an increase in referrals. And I'm really heartened by the support we have from the Chief Minister, certainly the Minister for Mr. Ashford, the Minister for Health and Social Care, and the whole executive team, is the commitment to resource and support that accordingly. So there will be a real push in the coming weeks and months for us to get additional resources to cope with what we see as a potential surge a little bit down the line.
Okay. And my second question is also for yourself. How has the Department for Health and Social Care adapted the way you support residents with their mental health, obviously given all the guidelines and travel restrictions that are currently in place?
It's been a challenge, but I think, you know, we work, like I said in my introduction, I've certainly worked with a huge range of incredibly, incredibly committed professionals who are incredibly adaptable and committed to their patient group. So there's been some incredibly novel ways of maintaining contact, which we're absolutely doing. We're maintaining contact with our client base. And as I said initially, we have around 4,350 people that we look after. So around about 5% of the population. So there's some people where we can speak to them, we can maintain telephone contact, we can speak to them via video conference facilities. There's some people clearly, because of the nature of their needs, that we continue to need to see on a one-to-one basis. And we're absolutely doing that, ensuring that we apply the correct protection and social distancing. So there's been a lot of really innovative practice that's gone on that enables us to maintain contact with some of the most vulnerable members of our community.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, next up I have Paul from MTTV.
Actually, this obviously a change to my original question. We have the Chief Minister who's now tested positive. You've been in close proximity to him, as has everyone in that room with you there, as has most of the Timbal members. So take us through what happens. Do you now have to self-isolate? Do you have to take a test? And will everyone else have to take a test?
Firstly, we have been exercising social distancing within government offices, Paul. I actually haven't seen the Chief Minister in person for 7 days now. It was last Thursday when we did the press conference together. But as you may notice, the way we do the press conferences is we're not together at the podium at the same time. We physically move out of the room, away from each other, which is why there's the gap between someone going from the podium and coming in. So the last time I spent any duration of time of less than 2 minutes apart, 2 meters, sorry, apart from the Chief Minister was actually, I've worked it back 3.5 weeks ago.
So you feel fine yourself?
And I feel absolutely fine, Paul. I think, unfortunately, you're stuck with me for the duration.
Oh, no, love it. Can I ask Ross, thanks, Ross. I've had loads of mail today since we know you're going to be on, just from people who feel they may have fallen through the net. They haven't had the support, they haven't heard from people, or you know, and that sort of thing. And their worry gets even worse, even more than just being by themselves. Is there assistance for people who are feeling like that? Should they ring a number? Should they contact anyone in particular if they feel that they're being left out of the loop at the moment?
I think if there's people who are open to our service, and I'll be able to do the numbers, if they're open to a service, then I absolutely encourage them to get in contact with their key worker or care coordinator. As I said, we're continuing to run the service, but we're experiencing some staffing issues with social isolation, but we're a robust service, and we're still maintaining contact with our patient base. If there's people who are struggling, I would really actively encourage those people to access the information online if they can, in terms of utilising the practical advice and guidance that's available to them. And if it means, if that becomes a struggle and that's not assisted, we as a mental health service will absolutely engage with them through the contacting. Getting advice from their GP by telephone will make a referral, or indeed self-referring into our community wellbeing service, or accessing the self-referral process for online telephone support. So there's a variety of mechanisms that people can use, and what we're really going to be looking to do over the next few days is really populating that government COVID coronavirus site to make it more accessible with a far more range of information, advice and guidance would be.
Thank you.
Okay, next up I have Chris from Energy.
Good afternoon, Mr. Ashford. Thankfully, we've seen no drastic spike in the number of people requiring hospital treatment with COVID-19
on the island
so far. We can't afford to be complacent, though, so how well equipped are we here on the island to deal with a surge in such cases?
We most certainly can't be complacent, and every single measure that we have taken as a government has been about flattening that curve that we spoke about a few press conferences ago, where I showed the graph and showed the way that if it was uncontrolled, what the spike would be. So it's not just about being prepared, it's also about making sure that the cases are spread out over a period of time so our health services don't get overwhelmed. But there's been a lot of work going on. I've referred to before to the fact that we have doubled our ICU capacity up to 16. We've got the 50 additional beds being for the area being built on the side of Newlands there. We've got the conversion of wards 1 and 2 as well, which could hold up to 40 patients. So certainly there has been no complacency. We have built up our capacity drastically compared to what it was, but it is essential that people continue to follow the rules on social distancing, continue to follow the advice about only going out once a day for exercise and being sensible about it and their interactions with others, because we have got to avoid, if people think back to that graph I showed the other day, that blue line at all costs, because that is the sort of spike that places like Italy and Spain have seen, and we are doing everything in our power to make sure that does not happen here, but we need the general public to work with us in order to do that.
With respect, though, we're a much smaller jurisdiction, and I appreciate the strategy to flatten that curve and without worrying people, but does there come a time when we'd need to either bring in additional medical staff from other jurisdictions or even send our patients away for treatment should there not be sufficient resources here?
Well, I've spoken on this before, Chris. It was quite near the start of the outbreak. And one of the main key things I've always said is in the Isle of Man, we have got to be as self-sufficient as possible. We shouldn't think there's some great white hope across the water coming in to save us and do everything for us. The UK has its own problems. The Republic of Ireland has its own issues to deal with. We shouldn't be having to be reliant on them. And all of the work we've been doing as a government is to make us as self-sufficient as possible. But what we need is the public to help us to help them. That is what is going to actually make the big difference here, is the general behaviour of the public. And I've got to say, as the Chief Constable said yesterday at the briefing, 90%, 95% of people, the message has got through, they are obeying the rules, and we are very grateful to people for doing that in these unprecedented times. But it is important that 5% who still think it may not affect them do listen and do obey the rules, because while it may not affect them themselves as an individual, it could well affect someone they care, love and care for. So everyone has a role to play and a duty to play that role within our society at this time.
Thank you. And if I may ask Dr. Skelding a question.
Yes, of course. Yeah, I'll invite Dr. Skelding up.
Good afternoon. Easter is often the time when families come together. Obviously, that can't happen for many of us this year. Is there anything you can suggest to keep people's minds active and healthy if they happen to be spending the holiday alone?
Oh, well, I guess it's all about creativity. It's finding new ways of doing things. I've been really pleased. I mean, I gave up social media a couple of years ago because I thought nothing new happened. And yet it seems over the last few weeks and months, there's a plethora of all sorts of new and exciting things happening and people connecting in all new kinds of ways. Anecdotally, I've had a couple of patients in the last week who one of their main complaints is that they're very isolated. And actually, they feel more connected now than they did before the outbreak, because friends and family have reached out either on the phone or via social media and brought them into games online or just general chatting or even watching a TV program with them on their phone. And these have made huge differences to their mental health in a way that actually as a therapist I couldn't do. So I'm actually hopeful that these new ways of us as a society connecting with each other again are going to continue beyond this outbreak, and actually we might have lesser need for mental health services.
Thank you very much.
Okay, next up I have Alex from the BBC.
Hello, Minister. Just wondering, obviously our hearts go out to the 91-year-old's care home resident who's been moved to hospital. Can you give us any more detail on that, and crucially, what's happening at that care home now?
Well, in terms of the individual case, as you know, Alex, I can't share details on that due to patient confidentiality. That is quite strict, I'm afraid. But what I can say is the person is in a stable condition in hospital. But I can't give any more details than that. In relation to the care home, the department will be in touch with the care home and has been in touch with the care home. We'll be arranging for appropriate procedures to be put in place for the management of and isolation of residents that are there, and we'll be working closely with the staff on the procedures they now need to put in place to ensure the security of the home going forward.
Thank you. And if I could ask a question of Mr. Bailey, please.
Of course.
Hi, Mr. Bailey. If you listened to the press conference yesterday, you will have heard the Chief Constable mentioning that there'd been quite a dramatic rise in domestic abuse call-outs for his officers. That ties into a point which I'd like to raise with you. Obviously, at this time, the mental strain isn't just going to be on individuals, it's going to be on families as well. And there are going to be a range of problems families are experiencing, from full-blown domestic incidents to just increased things like arguments over things they wouldn't normally argue about. What suggestions would you give to members of families who are feeling a little bit frayed and facing some difficult circumstances during this lockdown?
Absolutely, as we referred to earlier, I mean, this is, you know, these are challenging times, and I think the comments and points that Dr. Skilding has just made in terms of innovative ways of connecting with people outside of the immediate family unit, and to prevent, to mitigate that isolation, innovative ways of engaging and structuring your day. But most importantly, it's so important that people who are experiencing any form of abusive behaviour, that they reach out. This current context is not going to, you know, impact on them, so they're unable essentially to reach out. I really stress the importance of people who are experiencing domestic abuse, domestic violence, to reach out and seek help. And the mental health is clearly the department's clearly got a role in that, but there's a variety of government departments and indeed third sector and charitable organisations that are there to assist and to support the victims of domestic violence.
Thank you.
Okay, next up I have Jess, Alaman Newspapers.
Hello, House Minister.
Hi, Jess.
This question is for Mr. Bailey, please. So, looking ahead, what is actually being prepared in terms of mental health once the pandemic is over? There's quite a lot of evidence and studies showing a dramatic impact on people's mental well-being after a crisis, particularly affecting adolescents, whose coping strategies may not be as well developed as older generations. I've done some research, actually, and one major aspect that arose after the Christchurch earthquakes in New Zealand was a campaign called All Right, and it supported the psychosocial recovery of people affected and was launched during what they called the disillusionment phase, which is when people realized how long it was going to take to recover, and therefore feelings of frustration grew. So what is being prepared for our disillusionment phase?
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, there's a wealth of evidence out there in terms of, you know, almost the kind of the post-traumatic episode of crisis. So we'll, as I alluded to previously, this is inherently predictable. And there's a lot of a huge wealth of information and work and innovative practice, like you've referred to yourself, schemes that have been employed historically. We're not going to try and reinvent the wheel. We want to see what works, where there's a clear evidence base. And if necessary, we can look at replicating that and tailoring that locally. So absolutely, it's entirely predictable that we're going to need additional resources. We're busily looking at modelling and looking at business cases so we can resource that. And I said previously, I'm extremely grateful from the support we have from the executive team our ministers and chief ministers in that regard. So as a mental health service and our wider stakeholders, you know, we're absolutely committed to identifying the need and utilising innovative approaches to mitigate the risk of this post incident.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And my second question is for Health Minister.
Of course, Jess.
So this question has been asked before, but I feel it hasn't been answered. It is, how many key workers have been tested positive for coronavirus? And does the government plan to keep the public updated on this, especially as we're talking now about mental health professionals, some of those people might have been affected
I guess we wouldn't publish the numbers of individual key workers that would test positive any more than we would any other group. That wouldn't be something that would be released, and I'm not aware of other jurisdictions doing that either. It's private information. If people wish to share their own information, that is fine, but we wouldn't drill down into those sort of details. And also, to be frank, I don't think it'd be best use of public health's time separating out who is a key worker, who wasn't, in terms of the cases coming through. From public health's point of view, the important thing is they focus on the contract tracing, because I need to emphasise again, the whole purpose of testing is not to tell the individual if they've got the virus or not. It's in order to break the chain of the virus. It's about identifying potential people around them who they may have been in contact with, who may be asymptomatic, and spreading it in the community. So that's the purpose of it. So no, we don't hold that data, and I wouldn't expect public health to collect that data.
Right. Okay, thank you.
Okay, and then last up, I've got Amanda from Geoff the Mongoose.
Thank you, and please can we pass on our best wishes to the Chief Minister?
Most definitely.
We have a question on postnatal care for either the Health Minister or Mr. Bailey. Obviously, babies are still being born despite the pandemic, and new mothers are giving birth without family members there and caring for newborns in a really scary time without the usual postnatal home visits. Are there plans in place to diagnose and support mental health problems like anxiety and postnatal depression in this quite scary time?
I'll let Ross come in on that.
Absolutely. There is indeed. Like I said, the postnatal and postnatal depression is a core part of our service delivery, certainly with the community mental health team. And that work continues. We have dedicated professionals who have a specialist interest in this area, both in psychiatry and in nursing. And the work continues with our district nurse, our district nursing colleagues, our GPs, our health visitors. And it really is a multidisciplinary approach. So absolutely the work continues. What may change and has changed is our mode of delivery. So it's a one-to-one face-to-face contact. We might be engaging in telephone calls or video calls. But there's a great deal of work that's going on, and that won't stop. And I can absolutely understand that certainly new mothers and expectant mothers and families can feel really vulnerable at this time. So it's more important than ever that we are proactively reaching out to those patients in particular. And I just want to mention really the previous question regarding key workers. I just wanted to stress the sheer volume of work that's going on that I've been privy to as one of the part of the leadership team in contingency planning for when our resources are stretched. So when we do experience professionals who are self-isolating, there's been a vast amount of work making sure that our resources and contingency planning for those resources to be robust enough to continue to deliver a service. And that's the same in mental health and all the other departments, with all the other services within the health department. There's been a huge amount of work in that regard, and the services are robustly contingency planned for.
Mr. Ashford, ministers such as yourself, along with medical professionals, are working around the clock in stressful circumstances. What are ministers such as yourself doing to look after your mental health, and what is your advice for others in stressful key worker positions?
I mean, I think in some ways, I know people handle stress differently is what I would say. And the important thing to remember, and certainly the focus, I can only speak for myself, the focus has always been, sometimes I'd have to take a step back and think it's not worth getting stressed over. Worrying doesn't change things. And certainly my coping mechanism is I always like to look at things, and if it's a problem, I always like to focus on how do you fix that problem. That's only me personally. Different people have different coping mechanisms. One of the things I would say to people is we all have things that we enjoy doing. Obviously, at the moment, with the restrictions in place, some of those things we won't be able to do because they're outside activities. But if there's something around the house you enjoy doing and you're feeling stressed and you're stuck at home, focus on those things. If you're in your household with your family, focus on your family. Spend time with them. And talk through your problems as well. that's a very important thing. My personal, like I say, coping mechanism is, if it's a problem, I'm quite a strategic thinker, and I like to focus on what you do to resolve that problem. But that's certainly how I deal with stress.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Well, thank you very... Oh, sorry, a question from Tim and then Leanne. Tim first.
Yeah, just a quick one, Minister. Obviously, we mentioned there's 32 cases, new cases, a positive test being confirmed today. And together with yesterday as well, it's taken us above the red and the orange curves that you've been referring to. So is that a big worry to you?
At the moment, Tim, it's not. As one of the things I stressed the other day when we did the graph, as we go along, we are going to see peaks and troughs. In the real world, you don't get a lovely smooth line. You will get peaks and troughs. What matters, as I think I mentioned at the time, is that you look at a couple of weeks' worth of data. Now, if we were getting a consistent trend, then that would be a worry. But at the moment, there's no proof of that. We are still within our trend data. And Leanne?
I just have a final question for Dr. Skelding, please.
Yeah, of course. Okay.
So we've had reports that some people are becoming nervous to go out for their allocated exercise because of others either making assumptions or accusations. So my question is, where do we draw the line between being responsible and reporting bad behaviour and people being penalised for doing what they're allowed to do?
In terms of mental health, we generally talk about the judgments that we're making. Often things in life, that the issue is about a judgment that we make about somebody rather than the fact. So the fact is the person is out. We don't know how many times they've been out, whether they're abusing that, whether they're doing something they shouldn't be. We just know that they're out. So most of the time, unfortunately, we're making assumptions. But equally, it goes the other way, that sometimes we're making an assumption that somebody is judging us. So basically, we need compassion on both sides. To try and be objective and rather than judgmental when we're looking at our own behaviour and at the behaviour of other people.
Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much. And can I say a huge thank you to Ross and Mark for joining me today. I think people have found that very, very useful. I know I certainly, for one, have. And I would like now to move on to the shout outs for those that are doing remarkable work around our community. Please do keep your nominations for Howard's Heroes coming in. If you're on Twitter, please tag the Chief Minister using his handle at Howard Quayle MHK and the hashtag Howard's Heroes. So first up, on the topic of mental health, my first shout out today goes to one of our fantastic mental health nurses, Helen Holder. Helen has produced downloadable information pack that people can access to help them with their mental health during the current pandemic. It's a wonderful resource that Helen has developed off her own bat, having asked on social media if anyone would find such a resource useful. 600 plus replies later, I think the answer to that is pretty clear. We are currently in the process of uploading additional self-help resources, as Ross referred to, advice and information to our website in the coming days at gov.im/coronavirus. Helen is a shining example of the commitment and proactive approach being taken by professionals and the wider community. So well done, Helen, and thank you. And can I also, as Minister for Health and Social Care, put on record my thanks to all those working within our mental health services. It's been just over 2 years now since I took on this job, and I have been constantly amazed at the dedication and support that those services offer. That we have a lot of hardworking individuals within the service, and I'm absolutely amazed in what they do day in, day out. So thank you from me for all that you do. Secondly, you may have heard about the amazing team effort made to bring a further shipment of personal protective equipment to our island on Tuesday. 65,000 masks were delivered to the NSC from the UK in a little over 6 hours. So a huge thank you to those involved, the Army for organising the logistics, Clipper for currying the shipment to Liverpool, Wynn Aviation for handling the cargo in Liverpool, Logan Air for delaying their plane so the shipment could be made, Menzies and all the Isle of Man Airport staff, and FCX for delivering the shipment to the NSC. This has been a fantastic effort by all involved to secure the equipment and make it available for use by the island's healthcare professionals. Thirdly, another shout out to an Up North shop, Andrea's Stores, for helping older and vulnerable people in the area. They are delivering local produce, supporting our economy, and always showing a cheerful face, a lifeline with wonderful customer care. Fourthly, as we know, the schools have been providing support for their students. So a shout out goes to Socha Cowan for setting up e-learning at Braddon School, along with all the support, catering and site staff at all of our schools around the island. I would also like to add one from myself again, as well as Minister for Health and Social Care, and that is to all our community pharmacists who are still out there working in our community, getting medication out to people and ensuring that people, even in these difficult times, can still receive the treatments that they need. A huge thank you to each and every one of them. So what your lineup over the weekend, you're going to have a few days break from me. You've got Minister Boot here tomorrow. Then on Saturday, Minister Skelly will be joining you. On Sunday, with it being Easter Sunday, I believe the Lord Bishop is going to come in and share a few words with us. And then you will be back with me on Monday. But just before I go, can I just leave with one message? And it is this. Easter time normally would be a time for us spending time with our family and friends, for going out and enjoying the wonderful weather that we are currently experiencing out there. But this year is different. This year, for the sake of our island and for the sake of our community, we are asking people to stay home wherever possible and only go out for their daily exercise. There will be many more Easters to come, but we get one chance to crush this virus. So it is with a heavy heart that I have to say it, but I urge people over this Easter weekend, do the right thing for the island, the right thing for the community. Protect yourself, your family, and your loved ones by staying at home. Thank you very much.